The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. Ken Kendrick, Diamondback owner, and Derek Hall, team president, just finished up a press conference over at their facilities. Gordon Spurgeon is out there. He's going to zoom in here momentarily because it sounds like there was some movement that was made on the stadium that they talked about today. So there's some news cycle stuff. Also, Jordan Hamm has a package, a piece on Kristen Muir. Kristen Muir, someone we've done many stories on. She's going to be part of the National Football Foundation Valley of the Sun chapter, a scholar-athlete luncheon that will be in March, March 8th. I am emceeing that. Jody Jackson and Charlie Regal are distinguished Arizonans. It is a big-time show. And we'll have Kristen on just to get caught up from Jordy's view. He's been doing her stories through the years. Amazing person, Kristen Muir. So we have that. Opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business through the years. In fact, we visited with Jeff Meachy the other day for about an hour just on stuff. Big sports fan. We appreciate Desert Financial and their support. So my weekend was really about Saturday Night Live's 50th anniversary. Friday night, watch the concert on Peacock, start to finish. What was the line that Jimmy Fallon said? And I find Jimmy Fallon pretty good. You know, comedians are not everybody's taste, but he kept joking about how there's 200 people watching on the stream of Peacock. But it was so good. The music was so good, and so many great artists, and so much passion, and just it was 3 hours. It was well-produced, well-choreographed, big names come walking out. It's like, oh my gosh, let me lean into this a little bit more. And then last night was their 50-year anniversary. If you're wondering, the only sports that I really took in over the weekend was Team USA's fight against Team Canada on the ice and golf. And I watched U of A Houston and a little bit of the ASU game. They're hard to watch right now. But if you're coming here to get my take or how great the NBA All-Star game is, I will just turn you over to Draymond Green. Okay? It sucks. It's just not. And I don't want to hear this, well, they're catering to 18 to 34-year-olds. No. Jacking up threes, not playing hard, and that's all you're doing is, you know, whatever. So, and the fact that LeBron didn't announce the last minute, my whole thing on Devin Booker is if you're going to be an all-star, you got to win championships. And he got passed over this year, but he should have been there as LeBron's replacement. I'm not, because it's a hard gig. It's not like you look on that roster and say, oh, that guy's a stiff. That guy can't play dead. Devin Booker's really good. But here in Phoenix, everything is like, oh, yeah, the Suns are the greatest ever. And this year, of course, they aren't. So my weekend was filled with SNL. And, you know, the SNL show, when, for those of you that are just new to SNL, because I will talk to people, my kids, I'll talk to people that are in their 20s and 30s that watch Saturday Night Live. That's how it's supposed to be. They'll be like me, where you're sitting there last night and a sketch comes up and Eddie Murphy is in it. And you're laughing hysterically because you remember when. Nothing wrong with that. Eddie Murphy's still relevant, big time. Maya Rudolph showed up. Tom Hanks showed up. Adam Sandler did a wonderful tribute. John Belushi, the late John Belushi, with the sketch at the end, Don't Look Back. It was fabulous. There wasn't a moment where I sat there and said, boy, this really blows. But just based off my friend groups, and based off the social media that I'm looking at, it's not like I'm getting overwhelmed with, boy, did I miss out on the All-Star game. I saw the hockey in real time. But the hockey in real time, I have to believe Adam Silver is, what can we do? Because these leagues, they want to have relevancy around their All-Star games, or they want to have relevancy, and they go by what is being trending as relevant, which nobody turned in to watch the hockey in big numbers until it started getting out there. I'm really interested to see the numbers and how they look. It's not always about the numbers. If you force the issue, like I'll go do a story, it'll get one view. And the next thing you know, it gets thousands of views. It's just, if you're sitting there every day and say, boy, this has got to come through in a big way. The Daytona 500, just because Trump was in his limousine going around, it's not why I was there for a nanosecond. Devin was there for the whole race because that's what Devin Henry does for us. I'm busy. You know, watching the golf out of Torrey Pines, I was more fascinated in Tiger. And Tiger being in the broadcast booth. So we're going to take a brief break here because Spurge is coming on board from the Diamondbacks. So let's get our first break out of the way. And then we'll talk with Jordan Spurgeon about what just happened over at the Diamondbacks this morning. He's out there. And then you'll hear from Kristen Muir and the National Football Foundation. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, as promised, let's go out to the Diamondbacks. Jordan Spurgeon was out there bumping around. He sent me a text about some broadcast news with the Diamondbacks and much more because you came into Ken Kendrick, the owner of the team, and Derek Hall. What happened out there today? What did they say that was interesting to the fan base?
Yeah, it was kind of an impromptu thing this morning. I just rolled in and they were setting up to talk, and they were just talking a lot. You know, if you go back a year ago, it almost felt out of left field. You're coming off a World Series run, and all of a sudden it's, hey, we don't know if we're going to stick around. The tone of what's going on with trying to get renovations and all that things was much different. Today, it's a complete 180. They both said that. They both said they feel like they're in an amazing place with renovations in the city. They feel a real partnership. So obviously they're waiting for legislation to go through and all that stuff. But Derek touched on that if it passes, they expect the next 4 to 5 off seasons to be spending, you know, all the money they get for renovations between the two, between them and the city, to as you see some guys passing by right now too, some of the pitchers getting work. This is spring training, by the way, if you ever want to come out. It's free for fans to come watch all this. You can meet all these guys. But yeah, they just were saying that they expect that by the time we get into the season that they'll be able to start planning and working on it. A lot of it's stuff that fans won't see, the HVAC system, cement, all kinds of things that just need the underbelly of the stadium that just need to be fixed. There's just a lot of things that are underlying issues. So it's not going to be a lot of pretty stuff. They've already done some of that with the roof being fixed again now, with the new video and audio system last year, but they expect they need to do a lot of infrastructure stuff and they feel like they can do that. So it doesn't sound like they're talking about leaving like they were last year.
Well, that's good. I don't know if they brought it up today, but I've heard they want to shrink it from 48,000 down to about 35,000, which would be a lot of work. You're saying 3 to 4 years is what they said today of work?
Yeah, about 4 to 5 of work throughout the offseason, trying to not interrupt their non-baseball schedule. There's obviously a lot of concerts and events there, but that they'd have to work around. So that's why they think it takes a little bit longer. But they may even, you know, draw back on some of the concerts and things they plan over the next couple of years once it goes through, just so they can get these renovations done a little bit faster. I think they did throw out the potential of downsizing a little bit. Somebody did ask about that. It's kind of an idea that's been floating around. So we'll see how they go about that. But I know that they're working on just trying to get the best bang for their buck. And like Ken said, and he said for the last couple of years, you know, the more the fans invest, the more that we're going to invest. I don't know how that looks when you have 3,000 less fans, but the only time they're really selling out to capacity is in the playoffs when they get there. So I don't see why that's a problem.
When the Dodgers want to have a home game in Phoenix.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, give all the D-backs people crap and all that fun stuff. Yeah.
Jordan Spurgeon is out there at the Diamondbacks spring training, and he just popped on in. You work in spring training, right?
Yeah. I'm over here at Salt River Fields. I'm the in-game host, one of two with the Sienna. She also does Diamondbacks during the regular season. So gearing up for that, just kind of taking it all in around here before I get too busy with hosting some of these games. So excited to get after it, though. We did our first run through yesterday at the MLB Invitational. Everything's working, you know, knock off all the rust of the microphones and
good for you,
all that stuff. So yeah, really excited to get after it again.
Yeah. Are they going to be any good?
Yeah, one would hope, right? On paper. I mean, even Ken said it, you don't win on paper. I think I stand a very similar standpoint to him. I think if they make the playoffs, that's the hard part for them. They're a team that should go deep. Yeah. But you still got to play 162 and get there. So we'll see if they can do that. But as the they should be better.
As the in-game host, you could say, no, they're going to blow this year. Come on now. You could say that.
Technically, I work for Salt River Fields and that, but Diamondbacks.
Oh, so you can really lay it out there.
Yeah,
you
can really say what I want.
Stuff. Thanks for checking in.
Thanks, Brad. See ya
later, Spurge. He's out there working. I like just I don't know Iron Man if you like it, but I like just dropping people in. You know, we gotta get Iron Man his own camera though. We've been doing this together forever, and there's just times that Iron Man is far more interesting than I am. And people say, "What's Iron Man like?" I said, "Ah, it's a long show." On the other side, so. I do want to, on the other side, I'm going to get into what Jordy sent over with the National Football Foundation and the Kristen Muir story, which is phenomenal, an update on her. But Gilbert Arenas popped up on my radar over the weekend. Some things that he said, former Wildcat, former NBA star, and he's thinking about trying to get involved. He's been asked to be one of the auditioners. To audition, I should say, for the NBA on NBC. It's interesting comments that I will get to on the other side about this gives you kind of an idea of what a bleep show our industry has become. Okay, that's next. So Gilbert Arenas made it into the news cycle over the weekend on social. Gilbert Arenas played at U of A in the NBA with the Warriors, the Wizards, and others. And he said that he is going to audition for NBA on NBC. NBC is looking for new announcers for their broadcast team. Meantime, it has been revealed that Shaq has agreed to a $15 million a year deal to stay at TNT. The whole group is going to stay over there, Kenny and Charles and Ernie and all of them. Gilbert said, though, on his podcast, or in an interview on a podcast over the weekend, that the NBC people have told him, it could be NBA Entertainment, but that they've got to be more positive about the league, tearing down the product. And he was trying to explain it in a way that I just don't know why you would want to try to fool an audience. Maybe it's just me being in this business for a while that I look at it and say, that's garbage over there. Why would anybody, like, the NBA is almost unwatchable. It's very close to unwatchable this time of year. And just because you say it, it's a great product once you get through April, get into the first round of the playoffs, you're going to have the occasional blowout, but it's pretty clear that this league and all-star games in general, you know, what? Look at what's happened to the Pro Bowl. Look at what's happened to NBA All-Star Weekend. Now, hockey's different. I loved what happened in hockey over the weekend. Love that. The baseball All-Star game, I've always felt, is the most pure. You could have some fun with it. You should have some fun with it. You should show personality. But there's not a good reason at all to watch. And it's if you're telling your talent that you're going to hire. Like, I've never said anything when I've done this now, being in the position of hiring talent. I've never looked at someone and said, well, you got to say this and you got to say that. That's not what we do. You have to hire talented people. You have to walk with them and see what they can understand as a line to cross or not cross. Okay? If you go to a high school game and you say it's not a great game, it's true. If it's running clock, it's not a great game. And so we are based around college and high school and pro. My first thought process in putting together shows and stories is, yeah, there's some shows where you have big name national guests or worldwide guests. It's fine. They're just people. But it is talking about the product. And am I tearing down my own industry by saying, hey, by the way, the NBA blows this time of year? No. Draymond Green said yesterday after the game, it blows, is right. It's right. And it's, this is an old guy get off my lawn. Old guy get off my lawn is like, well, none of these players are any good. They're all overpaid. Some of that's true. Some of that's true. But, you know, when owners are the ones that are signing the checks, I can't fault the player. I can't. But I also know that the players have dialed it back. They dial it back during All-Star break. Who did I see? It was Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum said we need to have a longer break during All-Star week. And I don't agree with that. Something about how there's got to be more on the line. It was just, you sound like you're whining. And I don't like to be around whiners. Just go do your job and do it to your best. The idea of an all-star game being how it was with MJ and Dominique Wilkins and the late Dikembe Mutombo and Patrick Ewing and from my era, that's not happening now. These players cannot risk to get hurt. These players can make lots of money not jumping over cars. You don't see the superstars jumping over cars. In fact, you see Chris Paul doing what Chris Paul does, getting caught cheating. It's Chris Paul. Point guards are the ones that will always fight, stretch. This is how you get around the rule. And then he gets caught. And Wembanyama's like, what? That was Saturday night. But for Gilbert Arenas to be told going in, you have to be more positive and build up the game. I don't know. It's a Tuesday night in late February, and we have this Titanic showdown between Memphis and Atlanta. Well, it's not a Titanic showdown, and there are shooting threes, and Ja Morant's on the bench, and Trae Young's not playing, and they're load managing minutes, and like LeBron passing on the All-Star game, how can anybody defend that? Anybody. That could even be a shot directed towards, Adam Silver and the NBA as a whole. Let's not forget that LeBron's business manager, Maverick Carter, is wanting to do an overseas league. So you look at all these things. I'll be fascinated to see what the number shows today. Doesn't mean that it's right, doesn't mean that it's. There are some people that woke up today that probably said that was the best All-Star game they've ever seen. I couldn't understand those people. I really couldn't. I would just be like, can you please explain it? And then after like 20 seconds, I would be, okay, thanks very much. On to better news. The National Football Foundation Valley of the Sun chapter is having their annual scholar athlete lunch. We believe here in a big way at Sports360 into academics do actually matter. We have our all academic team. We've been doing it since day one. The National Football Foundation has been here over 40 years doing their Valley of the Sun chapter event, and we love being a part of that. I will emcee it once again this year. Kristen Muir is going to be on stage. We have four girls flag football players that are going to be honored. Next year, I believe it's going to be an entire night on its own. Takes a lot of work to put this together. So there'll be 30 boys on stage, there'll be four girls that'll be honored, and Kristen Muir will be the one presenting. Now, Kristen Muir's story is one, she's the only girl, the first girl, I should say, first girl in AIA in Arizona high school football history to kick an extra point in a playoff game. Kristen was at Marcos Denizo when we first started doing stories on her, and Jordan Hamm has been very close with her through the years. And he sat down with her just, I believe, yesterday and got an update from her. She will be presenting and will be on stage Saturday, March 8th, 12:45. Tickets are available at AZNFF. We'll be honoring Jody Jackson. We'll be honoring Charlie Regal. This was earlier, Jordan Hamm with Kristen's update.
Welcome into Walking On with Jordan Hamm, and we have a very special guest this week. Kristen Muir, friend of Sports360, AZ, was a Padres kicker for Marcos Denizo back in the day, continues to do some great work here in the community as well. And Kristen, I think back to when we first met. You were running from football practice as a kicker for the JV team over to your volleyball match. And just juggling all of it. And it was kind of like, this is a cool story. And little did we know, how all these years later we'd still be working together. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But what are some of your memories of that time in your high school career and taking on football and starting down that path?
I just remember having the conversation with my parents of how I wanted to do both sports at the same time, and they were very like, I don't know how that'll work, and I don't know if coaches will be up for that. So just going through that whole convo and pretty much trying to like wager my games and which ones I can miss and stuff for like volleyball so I can make all the football. But it would be really fun to be able to go So my volleyball practice, hang out with the girls for a little bit, and then run out, get changed into my football gear, and then remind the guys that, like, hey, I'm still out here, and I'm still in this position, and, you know, still putting in work. And so there was a lot of work behind the scenes that the boys didn't get to really ever see. But it was always fun going back out on the field to then just kind of remind them of, like, hey, like, I still am putting in this work. I still am your guest kicker. I'm getting this done. And those were probably the best things. And, like, my favorite or the most fun memory was when we had a volleyball and a football game at the same time. And so having that within the same, you know, that just happened at the same time was really cool. And so being able to play within both games and then make kind of a record that night within both was really fun.
And you get moved up to varsity. You become the first woman to score a point in an AIA state championship football game. A lot of accomplishments, a lot of recognition at that time. I know a lot of people were messaging you, you know, talking about being a role model and things like that. Just at that point, those last couple years of high school, what, when you look back, what are you most proud of? What memories jump out at that time in your life?
I think I was just most proud of the endless support that I had from my family and either their coworkers or maybe even a few just like random like parents within the stands, and then coming up to me and just giving me like words of encouragement after the games was really fun. Honestly, just making memories with my coaches was really fun. Just having alone time with them was great. And then there was one memory that like I will laugh to forever. And I think it was my junior year. We're doing practice for playoffs, and I'm done with my practice. Like I've kicked for a couple hours now, and now it's just time. I'm waiting for the end conditioning, and it was very cold on the field, and so I had a sweatshirt on and I had my helmet and everything. And so the boys are on one end of the field. I'm on the other because I'm waiting for them to be done. And I thought, like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if I tucked in my arms from my sweatshirt? And then if I ran, like, will they fly behind me? And so I'm just at the end of the field, just running around trying to see if these arms are flailing. And then I was like, oh, I wonder if I spin, if they'll like go out. So I'm doing all these random things, and then I look over and I see my coach, and he's standing there with a couple of the guys, and they're just, he's shaking his head and he's laughing. He was like, oh my God, that's my player out there. And it was like, just little things like that would like really make this season. And that's what I kind of look back on from all the memories with that.
Totally. Totally. It's been 4 years, right. It's been 4 years since your accident. So, you got in a car accident 2021. I remember getting the text from your mom and kind of getting filled in and, you know, not a lot of uncertainty at that time. Can you take us through kind of that experience and what the prognosis was initially that the doctors gave you?
Yeah. So, got into a car accident and we're coming back down from Payson, and the road that they had at the time, there was just a very sharp curve, really sharp turn. And so the driver just lost control of the car, and with the railing hit the mountain and rolled for a little bit. It was probably only like 10 seconds, but it felt like 30. And civilians pulled me out right away. They got me up to the hospital right away. The doctor then told me that I probably wouldn't walk again. And I said, okay. And then he was like, I'll say that one more time. You'll probably either will never walk, or you may have a chance at walking. And I said, okay, I heard you. I was like, you know, when are we doing the test and all of such, and get that going. So if they got me back down to Mesa Banner, they had to drive me back down because the weather was really bad at that time, that they couldn't airlift me. And so they were able to get my surgery within the next morning, the first surgery. And if they would have waited one more hour, then I would have been completely paralyzed. So I got extremely lucky. It was a 7-hour procedure, I believe. I still had some bone fragments behind some nerve branches and things like that. So they didn't want to touch them. So those just kind of, molded over time. And yeah, so when, you know, January 25th of 2021, after that day, it was just pretty much go time. I started PT 2 weeks before I was supposed to, because I really wanted to. The therapist would come in and they were supposed to just introduce themselves. And I was like, well, you know, what if we try? And they're like, usually we don't. And I was like, but what if we try? And so then we did. And so that was really fun. And, you know, they started working with me right away. And the nurses were so uplifting. They would bring me like nail polish and like books to read and things like that. They played a huge part in keeping my morale up and keeping the positivity. After I was at Banner Mesa for about 2 weeks, then they transferred me over to Barros out in Phoenix. When there, that just like skyrocketed when it came to recovery. I had amazing therapists there as well that really played into that optimistic, positive playing. And one question that really got me just reversing or just shifting my perspective was when a neurotherapist came in and he asked if I ever like thanked my body, if I ever thanked my legs. And I was like, oh, I was like, no, I haven't. And just that little question just opened up or brought in so much of my mindset of, you know, instead of being angry, or I can be angry at that this happened, but I should also be thankful for what, like how they have carried me throughout life, how they've always literally supported me and how they continue to do so. So as they were there for me in life, now it's my turn to then be there for them and just do the best for my body. So that really helped out. And 4 years later, I'm moving and grooving and I'm at least able to walk and, you know, pass on my knowledge to the next generation. And who knows, maybe they may come back, maybe they won't. That's all right. I've accepted both sides, as it is very important to within the recovery. And yeah.
Awesome. You get the prognosis, you may or may not be able to walk. How soon after were you kicking a field goal?
Oh, I think it was within, that year or year and a half, I would say.
I think it was like 4 or 5 months. Like,
yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I think it was like that summer.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it totally was. And it was just like, it wasn't even like a full kick. I mean, if I was able to, that'd be awesome. It was just like a one step and I was still able to get it in. So we were really happy about that. And so the build up to that was really fun. And I remember just some of the like practice kicks we would do before and the videos and like the reaction was probably some of my favorites.
Yeah. Yeah. What kept you going through that? I'm sure there were a lot of ups and downs. I'm sure there continues to be ups and downs, but especially when it was brand new, it was COVID. So that added a whole different wrinkle to everything. But what kept you going?
Honestly, just the thought of being there with my family and helping out people around me. My biggest and only goal was to make sure that I was healthy enough to be with my family, still making memories with my family without it feeling like I'm possibly either burdening or being a hindrance on anything, and still being strong enough to, you know, be independent and just provide help to those around me. Cause that's just my goal and my purpose in life is just to help. And my family means so much to me that I couldn't see myself not being able to help out with like small little things of like even bringing the groceries and things like that. And so just literally just being with my family, it was the biggest motivator. And I had so many people uplifting me and pushing me up that I was like, I cannot let these people down, and not only like let them down, but let myself down. And so I have to keep pushing, like no matter what.
Mm-hmm. During that process, Desert Financial Credit Union comes in, wants to get involved. Can you take us through what they did and then how that sort of grew into something that you're continuing to work with them today?
Yeah. Yeah. So at first it started with just like a random act of kindness. And so they gave me a lot of cool things while I was in the hospital. They gave me like an Oculus. I can't remember everything, but they gave me like a little VR set. I believe a gift card to Target, which was awesome. and so it was a VR set too, cause I could just, you know, play around and still be mobile and such. And a couple of things, but that was really, you know, just a surprise. And I was extremely thankful for that. That helped out with a lot of clothes and things that I needed within that time. And then it formed into them giving me a scholarship within my name. And that was a surprise within itself. I always wondered how people, you know, got scholarships in honor of their names, and they then presented me with one. So I'm extremely blessed with that opportunity and to be able to help out the younger generation going forward. And it's been, we've done this 4 times now. And I think it was after the second year, it kind of grew again exponentially with adding on Anthony Robles' scholarship, the Unstoppable Scholarship. And so being able to work with him as well has been really amazing. And being able to get his perspective and side of things has been awesome too, and very uplifting. So just being with that crew has been very rewarding and just a very positive environment, which I'm extremely grateful for.
Are there any stories where you meet the scholars and they tell you about what they've been through, or anything that sticks with you through that process, getting to impact so many young students' lives?
So they never tell me exactly what they've gone through, but with reading their bios and their answers on the essays that they like submit, it's just astonishing to see what some of these kids have gone through and the perseverance that they have. And so just being able to connect, like just the story with the face is always amazing. And then this past year, actually, there was 2 of our scholars that one of them, her sister was our first Christian Muir scholar, which I thought was super amazing. And then there was a gentleman that his sister was also a recipient too of the first year. So I thought that was really awesome that, you know, we had no idea that they were going to be there or that they were going to submit any of that stuff, or that there were siblings, quite frankly, and they still made it through the whole entire process and made it through. So that was really cool to connect with that. But just seeing the surprise on the kids' faces, especially when they open up this little goodie bag, which I won't say, with that they also present them with, is just really fun. So just, again, being able to be a part of that journey is something I'll be forever grateful for.
And now you're working with the National Football Foundation, Valley of the Sun chapter. How did that come about, and what excites you about getting to work with them now that you're in the first couple years of that partnership?
Yeah. So that kind of, that was also a surprise too of, you know, like when I decided to do football, I literally was just doing it for fun. Like I never thought that it would trickle into this whole thing and this whole story. And so I believe it was presented through Brad, and he really wanted me to get into this organization and to be a part of it some way, somehow. And so I'm very thankful for him for kind of guiding and pushing, gently pushing me in some areas, which is great. And so the first year I was wowed. The second year when I was able to be a part of it, I was extremely honored. And just being able to see these girls, like the athleticism on them, oh my gosh, I'm just like, woo, it's awesome. It's super cool, amazing to be a part of, and being able to kind of mentor them within that time and just be a part of that, a part of the acknowledgement process for them is amazing. And so I'm glad I'm able to be a guidance for our younger generation, or for either just people in general of, or a very comfortable environment that you can get into and just feeling easy with it. And so I'm very grateful to be a part of these organizations and events where I can either help out and embrace all these people going forward.
Mm-hmm. What's it like going, you know, you playing football and now seeing the emergence of girls flag football and how it's exploded across the state, now an AIA sport, and you know, part of the work that you get to do at these NFF events is get to recognize some of those athletes. So what's that like, seeing those opportunities continue to expand? Really, in the last like 5 years, we've seen it explode.
Honestly, watching the girls play, it makes me just want to be like, man, I wish I could get in there. It just makes me want to play with them, really. And it just makes me happy as well, because as women, as we don't have not all of us has the physical, like just muscle to then put on all this stuff, it's kind of disheartening in a way where it's like, oh, well, you don't weigh this, or you don't have, you're not this strong, so we're not even going to look at your skill set, when they have all of these amazing skills that can go into this amazing athletic player. And so just being able to be a part of that, like, opening of a light and just being like, hey, there's these amazing, like, all these amazing opportunities and players that you can have within your team to then skyrocket your program, is just awesome to be a part of. And so watching it going forward is going to be amazing, seeing all these strong women come out of, like, the, not coming out the woodworks, but just being, like, actually recognized is also amazing as well, and is very uplifting.
Awesome. Well, Kristen, always enjoy catching up with you. Crazy to think all the stuff we covered in a couple of years, what you've been able to accomplish here in the Valley, both as an athlete and now as a mentor and a coach. And just thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.